Another one of the class of 2024, the Mercer County Hall of Fame, is Jared Samuels, named synonymous with Farrell Football Championships. Yes, first off, congratulations, Jared. This has got to be an emotional time for you and your family.
Thanks, Bob. It really is. You know, to come full circle with it, last January, my wife found out, you know, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And at the time, we didn't think she would be here this time of the year. And it rocked my world. I mean, I gave everything up, you know, as far as coaching, dropped everything, and tried to be her coach. But in reality, she ended up coaching me. You know, I was scared. I was really scared to death, man. But she's a warrior, man. And all the years she supported me, we've been together 27 years. And least I could do is stop everything I'm doing and beat her for her and try to coach her up. But again, she was coaching me up the whole time.
And obviously, it's so far so good.
So far, so good. She's in the last phase of her treatments. She'll be done in May. I'm taking her on a really beautiful vacation out of the country. And just want to pay homage to her because she's been the glue, been the rock. So many sacrifices she's made to allow me to coach. And I always tell other coaches, if your wife loves sports, get into coaching. If she don't, might want to negotiate that. She loves sports, though, all sports.
Growing up in Farrell, PA, we talk about sports.
Yes, sir.
Not many more competitive communities in the Farrell, PA community. Talk about growing up in Farrell and what it was like for you.
I grew up on 300 block of Fruit Avenue. Terry Harrison is here. He's on the board. He was the older guys. I was a younger guy on the block, my brother and I, but my brother was 3 years older than me, so I was a little runt running around, following the older guys around, getting knocked around, playing football in yards, and that's how I met your father. You know, my doctor, my mentor, everything to me. And I'm going to tell you a little story, how I met your father. We were playing football, older guys, and right on the corner in the yard, trees everywhere, but there's also, like, glass everywhere, too. So I get tackled, and I split my elbow, need stitches. So I go to the hospital. So the doctor who was doing my stitches, he didn't numb my arm. I'm 7 years old. He didn't numb my arm, so he starts stitching my arm up, and I'm screaming, blood everywhere. So my father, him and the doctor had words, and he goes, I'm taking you to a Farrell guy. You're going to see a Farrell doctor. And that's the journey, how I met your father. And he's been my doctor father, I call him, because he threatened me almost every year. He was the one that kind of saved me. When I was 18 years old, I was a junior in high school, and your father recommended me to go to the Cleveland Clinic because I had a heart issue, and I had high blood pressure at that young, and they couldn't find out what it was. So he looked out, made some calls. I go to the Cleveland Clinic. I've been on blood pressure medicine since I was 18 years old. And but he all these years, he checked up on me. It was tough love. He gave me tough love. I mean, he would tell me, you're going to stop coaching. I'm going to retire you. Every summer, I went in for a checkup. He would tell me that once I, you know, become a young adult. And I get emotional about him because, like, outside my parents and my uncles, he's been that constant in my life. But he was more than a doctor, man. He was more than a doctor. And we had a lot of discussions, you know, before I started coaching. And he would give me the background, you know, on Farrell and the history of it, along with my other family members. But he would always, you know, tell me, you got to take care of yourself. You got to take care of yourself. And he really meant that, you know. And so we would go in. He'd go, you're in trouble. So they're coming off, you're in trouble. Your blood pressure's up. You know, you're not eating right. So he got to the point where he started pulling my wife in to the visits because he was like, you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to live to see 40. You're not going to see 50, you know. And there were times where me being stubborn, you know, coaching, being out there 12 hours, you know, a day, especially during camp in the summertime. He would literally call me while I'm on the field. What are you doing?
Oh, my.
You know, it was just that kind of relationship, man. And this is an amazing, amazing man. And, man, I just feel like one of his sons, man. You know, and it just hurt me during the pandemic when we lost him. But he was, he's just... I can't. It's hard to describe, man. But your father meant so much to me. He's family. He's family, man, forever.
Yeah, I know he'll be thinking about you, and I'll feel his presence here as well.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir,
when
man.
I get to escort you down the aisle tomorrow, that's going to be an amazing moment. You became successful as a football player. What drew you to that sport? I mean, you played other sports, but football was your main sport. What was the difference?
Football was my least favorite sport growing up. My dad put a baseball in my hand when I was 6 years old. I actually started playing Little League when I was eight, starting, you know, on a championship team. We had won Mercer County that year. And that was, baseball was all of our sports in Ferrell. We played on the streets. You know, we played at the playgrounds. Tennis ball, wherever we could find a ball, we played baseball. I didn't get introduced to football until about that summer when I was 8 years old, and I started a midget program headed by Coach Bugsy Brown, who really was, it was tough. Like, you talking about how our generation grew up playing football. I mean, literally, they had us doing military things, you know, at 8 and 9 years old. You know, we used to duck, we called it a duck walk. We would duck walk 100 yards, crab walk 100 yards, and it was constant running. We, at the baseball field at Ferrell right now, we practiced there on Rome Boulevard. And the coaches, you know, Robert Brown, you know, he was a great coach. Donald Miller, Malik's granddad, Marco's dad. I mean, they were tough on us, but they were preparing us for life. And I gained all my, as far as, like, fundamentals from those guys. You know, I started a midget program. I started a center on a team with my cousin Bobby. Bobby Samuels, they had him at offensive tackle, believe it or not, playing next to Kobe Hilton's father, Brian Hilton. We were all in the line. You know, Gravel Craig was our quarterback, you know. And it was just, I was a young one. I was at that age, I started midget program because I was big. I was a big kid. So I was always a big, chubby kid. So my last year of midgets, I was trying to make weight. So Coach Brown would take me down to the Radisson, but before the Radisson was the Sheraton, and put me in a sauna. So after a while, he's like, you can't lose no weight. You know, this is like my 11 years old. So he took me around to the football field, the ninth graders, you know, and he said, you're going to play, you know, ninth grade. You can't make the weight. This was a Monday. By that Thursday, we had a football game, and Coach Jim Falcone, which is a great man in my life too, Jim, he started me, and we played against Sharon, and they beat us 2-0. So that year, we lost three games, 2-0 to Sharon, 6-0 to Mercer, and 8-0 to Greenville. And the following year, we went undefeated. You know, we won a championship, and I still got the photo of that. So that was the start, kind of the start of my football career. And from that point on, and like I said, Jim was Coach Falcone. He was great, you know. And it's just been a journey when it comes to that. High school, when we get to high school, you know, again, we all group together. Everybody that coached with me, you know, my age group, we all played together. And we played together in the summers. And this is how we bred ourselves as athletes. We would get up in the morning, 6 o'clock, go to the EJ. We would have basketball. After basketball, we would go to free lunch. After free lunch, we would go to the baseball field, play baseball. Then we play football. And that's kind of what was our pattern growing up. And once we got to high school, I'm going to tell you this one. We get to high school, so we're in two-a-day camp. You know, we get to two-a-days, and we're still not tired. So after two-a-days, we would go down to Kedron Playground, play basketball. So the coaches found out. They come down there one day. Oh, you guys aren't tired. You guys aren't tired, you know. And we really wasn't, because from the time we were 7, 8 year old, we've been doing this every summer. You know, we always played every sport, you know, when it was nice outside in one day. So we had a special team, man. You know, we really did. And we didn't get a state championship out of that team. And I'm still wrecking my brain over, because my junior year, when I made league MVP, we played Wilmington. At the time, they were double A. All right, we had ran the table. We had beat Clarendon at Clarendon first round. Second round, we played Monaca. who was number one in the state in single A. We upset them at Geneva College, 14-12, and we get to the championship, and Smart Gesso, Blair Sweet,
right.
You know,
Terry Varelli.
Coach Varelli. You know, we actually knocked Sweet out the game, and they put this little tailback in the game, and he had such, I think his last name was Bear. We couldn't tackle him. He had great, we were hitting, he had great balance. So we play them 7-7, get to the championship game, last drive. They get a field goal, win 10-7. They go to the state playoffs the first year.
Right.
They pick Canberra Springs over us, who were single A, the Gardner Point system.
Right.
And that always bothered me. So to the point where I started coaching, Canberra Springs was always public enemy number one. How did they take them over us? We were a better team, you know, and we should have won state that year. So we come back to my senior year, the following year, 89. You know, we tied Sheeran first game. I still remember Michael Archer scored a touchdown. It was 6-6. First drive, Coach Wildman, I'll never forget. He tricked us all. So they had a formation. And to this day, I think it was legal motion. They moved a tight end and a halfback from right to left. They were on their hash mark. It was a short toss to Mike Archie. We called him Spanky. Because Mike Archie, believe it or not, grew up in Furrow on the 800 block of Hamilton. I lived on the 700 block. He's a great childhood friend. So I said, I'm going to shoot this gap. I shot the gap. And I'll never forget, he had a tight jersey on. And I grabbed him, and my hands went straight down. I look up. He goes 70 plus yards, touchdown. The rest of the game, they don't score. He's like minus 10. We were in the red zone inside the 10-yard line 5 times. 4 fumbles, turnover on downs. So that game still haunts me. And we go on to win 9 straight games. We face Lurl, who we had beat 2 weeks prior to that, at Lurl, shut him out. And we go into the playoffs, 1 game from the Whitfield Championship. And we come to the game. They had a star quarterback, Chris Hupko. Todd Atkins played at Penn State. Hupko played at Pitt. And our first meeting, he played tailback. Our second meeting, they put him at quarterback, using like a slash. And they end up upsetting us, Newcastle Tiger Stadium, 14-12. And that loss, that was my last high school game ever, and it haunted me, man. And to say the least, you know, it was one game where we felt that we should have won a championship. So off to Westminster I went.
Talk a little bit about what makes you most proud. You think about all the things you accomplished, yes, as a player and or a coach. What's the top memory for you?
Seeing all the guys go off to college, you know, seeing even from the first year, taking over that program, you know, at the time, you know, it was, you know, people say they forget, they got recency bias. And I tell a lot of our fro, you know, people that, listen, we wasn't always as dominant. Like, you guys don't understand, when we first took over, it was bad. It was bad across the board, you know. The culture was bad. And I like to think that, you know, me, to rewind it back a little bit more, getting that job, I was an elementary basketball coach before I had the football job. Coach Shannon House got me to coach. And I coached Jamar Whitman's class, Kevin Brody, Rob Trudeau. I had them 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade. And I didn't know at the time, board member, leader of the athletic committee, Lester Robinson, him and, at the time, our principal, Mr. McFerrin, they was watching the games the whole time. I didn't know they were – I'm just coaching, you know. So I followed that group all the way up until they got to 8th grade. 8th grade year, coaching those guys, we went 24-0, all on the road. The gym was getting remodeled. We had to practice at the local center down on Federal Street. And Coach Shedd, I was like, you trying to get my job? But he told me, he said, that's your group. You got to follow them. You got to follow them. And when the job came open, you know, a lot of turmoil. It was a lot of things going on at school at the time. I got to tell you, I got to be honest with you. And, you know, Coach Falcone, I love him, but they pushed him out. He got pushed out. And I always told myself if I got the job, it wasn't going to end that way for me because I know he wasn't ready to leave. But I took over the job. They pulled me in for a meeting. You know, we've been watching you, and, you know, we think that you can take over the program. I said, I have no experience. I haven't coached, you know, football at this type of level, you know, but you're ready. We know you're ready. This is Coach, you know, Celestia Robinson and Mr. McFerrin. And it's by, you know, the grace of them watching me, the grace of God, that they took my name and put me in the interviews. And I always prided myself on, when I became a professional, in the professional field, that if I get an interview, nobody's going to beat me in the interview. And I'm not being arrogant, I'm not being cocky, but I can interview. And I went in, I had a presentation about what kind of program I wanted to build. And it started with the classroom, because at the time, team GPA at the time was a little below 1.9 as a whole. It really was. It was that bad academically. That was the first thing I laid out in my presentation to the school board. We got to change the grades, but you have to allow me to work this program, which entailed the times I got hired, and you know, in the winter, it entailed my coaches and I being access to the school district. We didn't teach in this, inside the school. We were all outsiders as far as, like, normally the process was a referral. If you didn't teach there, you couldn't coach there. We were allowed to go into school. Mr. McFerrin let us go into the classrooms, sit, observe, walk the hallways, make sure no kids were in the hallways. We did more coaching in that off season, those first 2 or 3 years, than we ever did as far as, like, on the field work. It was tough. It was challenging. There was opposition big time, because you still had, you know, Coach Falcone's following, you know, who understood how things went with him. But then you had the change that I wasn't recommended. I was a left field hire out of nowhere. And that's why a lot of people that were on that board, they didn't want to give me the credibility, because at the time, Coach Bucky Newell, which great brother of mine, he was recommended for the job, not me. We went to the interview process, and we had an agreement, man. Whatever happens, if you get it, I'll come coach with you. If I get it, you come coach with me. And there was never any type of drama between us two, but it was always division from within the district. You know, well, he should be the head coach. This guy shouldn't be. And I honestly used the naysayer votes as ammunition and fuel, you know, because one thing about me, I'm always going to be a competitor. And I knew what it took, because I always followed our program. From the time I graduated high school, I followed the program. I knew what it would take, and it was bigger than football at the time. You know, my thing was, if I could finish and go to college and graduate, anybody can. You know, I was an average student, you know, and I didn't apply myself. And by me going to Westminster College, it saved my life. I met another father figure, Coach Dr. Dar Huey, my position coach and defensive coordinator. He didn't care about me playing football. He just cared about me being good the next 40 years of my life. And he will always echo that. You know, he knew I could play, and I played a lot. I did very well in the Westminster program. But it was more important to him to see me succeed academically. And his wife, Dr. Sally Huey, they would tutor me, you know, and then for 4 years, I had a study group. I had a tutor. She tutored me because, honestly, I was deficient in a lot of areas, man. And that meant so much to me. And I told myself, if I ever can coach, it had to be academics first. It had to be 40 years first. Because we had, at Furrow, a lot of guys go to college and they don't finish college. And that's one thing I could come full circle with it. I'm so proud of my guys, you know, getting degrees. I got so many guys that running businesses. You know, from the first year I coached, you know, there's guys, Terrell Jackson, he has his own construction company. Kevin Brody has his own paint company. You know, Matt Carter, one of my linemen, class of 2011, he flies helicopters now. And to see those guys take different paths, Brandon Gavin's in the Army right now, that's all I cared about, was letting those guys be successful, because football, any injury could take you out. But if you get that education, you can fall back on that. And that's one thing that, you know, and I love it when I see the guys today get opportunities. And all I tell them, if to pay homage to the program, finish trade school, finish technical school, finish vocational school, go to the military, or finish college, get your degree, because that's going to be forever. And those guys got going to the master's degrees now. Kyle Wright, Jordan Townsend, Kobe graduated, which is a whole separate heartbreaking story for me, and Christian Lewis. You know, Kobe Hilton was not an honor student like those other three guys was, but he was so determined, you know, determined to get through school. You know, he had been diagnosed, you know, academically, he needed an IEP, and he didn't pout about it. He put his head up and he grinded, man. And so I get you know, choked up about those guys too, because they were all my first year coaching, my managers. They're running around 5-6 years old. Jordan Townsend always was in the end zone playing with the football by himself. And so I go out to look at my old pitchers, D10 pitchers of the championships, and those guys are laying right there on the ground. And then every year kind of evolved. Bryce Butler and those guys, same way. And it's just like, to think about it, man, I just, like the day of my death, I was just crying, man. Like, look how far we've come. And now the program that was once, honestly, a D10 doormat is now a powerhouse program. And I can sit back and with pride and say, you know what? We did it. Because now it's generational now. Ron Jackson's son made All-State this year as a freshman. You know, Ron Jackson was All-State. But it's just, it's great.
Lastly, Jared, nobody probably has more insight on, from the Farrell perspective,
yes,
on playing in the WPIL and
yes,
playing in District 10. Yes. Obviously, Farrell's going through that now. They have a chance next week to talk to the PIAA. Just from your perspective,
yes,
give us your thoughts and what do you think would be ultimately the best suited district for this Farrell, not just football, but the Farrell School District. Yes.
Well, to come full circle with this also, when I was hired at Farrell, honestly, I wanted to go back to District 10. All right? I was told when I was hired, that's not going to happen. We can't ever go back again. There was an agreement in place, and Whitfield said, we're going to release them, but they can't come back. D10 said, we're going to accept them, and we're not, you know, this is it, because they got tired of back and forth. So I definitely inquired about it. And I asked questions about it when I first got hired. And this is when I sit back and I lost social media, and they're blaming this person, that person. Well, the people that made decisions are still in the building. You know, and Coach Falcone, Mr. Branca, they made a decision. They convinced the board, which has about, I want to say, two members that was on it back then, that's still there. They all know what the decision was back then. They all know the underworkings of everything, how everything was agreed upon. So me sitting back, I'd be wanting to just go in, you know, make comments, but it's just going to lead to back and forth. But I understood the process. I understood what happened. And I knew that once I came in, it wasn't going to go back. And for those who try to critique District 10, you know, the Farrell people, I'm going to tell you this. They wasn't there the first 4 years when we were struggling, couldn't beat Mercer. You know, Charlottesville was always our rivalry. We probably scouted them more than any teams, so we had upper hand on them coming in. Lakeview, those were teams, you know. And District 10 now, and Whitfield now, 2A, and it's the same. There's no stronger teams in 2A than there is District 10 right now. So I get upset. Now, if you're going to go 3A and 4A, that's different over in Whitfield. But to me, why move now, and you're going to have different sports playing all different kind of levels. Basketball be at 1A. Football be at 2A. Basketball be at 4A. Girls basketball be at 1A. Football be at 2A. So you're going to... Where volleyball going to be at? So you're going to have probably 5-6 sports playing different classifications. And it don't make no sense, man. I just... You know, my frustration with it, and I don't care who don't like it. The agreement was made. They made an agreement. You got to honor the agreement. You can't flip-flop back and forth, and I think it could have been shut down if people that were on the old school board would just come forth and say, listen, this is how it is, this is the way it is. You're going to the playoffs every year, knocking on the door every year for the Western Final in football. Like, really, honestly, once you got D10, you got to face one tough team, which is Westinghouse now, which is, to me, the old Clarendon. You know, and it just don't make no sense, because I understood the process. I understood what took place then, and I understand what's going on now. It's just, to me, I just don't, they're not going to left field back in. And I told Amp this about 3 weeks ago with the VFW talking. I said, you know it ain't over, right? And he, you know, he looked at he gave me that laugh. I said, you got they voted you to go to leave. I said, but you know, we're putting letting you back in. And they proceeded to go through all the process, and they probably will, but the only way out, to me, is to try to suit your way out. And is the school district willing to pay all that money when they got other financial problems to deal with? And I may not still, I may not be inside the program, but I'm still inside the program. There's people teaching the school in that school district and members on the board of directors at the school district that keep me informed of everything. I know everything that goes on in that school district. Some might not like it, but that's just the way it is. And I didn't leave on the best of terms with some of the administration, you know. But again, I respect what they're doing. But my plan now that I'm not coaching, my wife is healed now, I'm going to run school board. I'm going to make a change from within. I'm not going to be on the sideline anymore. I'm going to make some real changes. And once again, I'm not coming to lose. I've already been talking to a few colleagues that live in Ferrell still, professionals, business-wise, educators. We're going to run for school board. And we're going to turn that school around and get it back on track, because the football team could be at championship level. Academically, the school district could be at championship level. And that's just how I feel about it.
Jared Samuels, amazing weekend for you and your family. Mm-hmm. Congratulations being inducted to the Mercer County Hall of Fame.
Appreciate you, man. You know, you're my brother, my big brother. I love you. And I'm going to continue to defend you, man, because they don't understand. We go back longer than I've been coaching. And again, I love your father. I'm so grateful to him. Another short story before I sign off. When Teal College had aspiration to be associate head coach with Coach Winslow, who I thank for the opportunity. So I go in for my annual physical, and I had all my tests done, blood work, everything. And your dad said, call your wife. My wife comes. He's done coaching. He's done coaching. And he showed me, you know, what's going on, and I had it was something, you know, he called it mechanical with my heart, you know, and that was it. He said, you got to lose some weight, get yourself together, and I ended up going to Westminster, which I thank Coach Benzo, man. Learned a lot from him. You know, we got Bryce Butler down there, you know, which I thought Bryce should be. Bryce, to me, he could have played at YSU. Coach Benzo, every day, he's like, how did this kid end up with us? How did he end up? But another special kid, he'll be here tomorrow.
Nice.
But I thank your dad, because now I can focus more on my health and my diet, man. If I were to coach, I probably wouldn't be here right now if I'd have kept coaching at the pace I was, because college is much more time-consuming and much more grinding than high school was. So I'm going to say your dad saved my life, man. So now I'm going to dedicate myself to my health first, and then my family. And like I told all the kids that I coached, and I tell my kids, you know, life got rules to it. You break the rules, you got to be held accountable for your actions. And I'll never change that stance, whether it's my children or the guys that I coached. And I'm just honored and blessed to be here, man. It's an amazing time, emotional time for me and my family, and we're going to soak it up. And as my brother, Coach Omar, always tells me, you got to enjoy the wins. And he's been with me since he's been 5 years old. I've been six. And
enjoy it, Coach.
I'm going to enjoy it. I'm sorry I'm taking up all your time, but I had to get out there about Coach O, man. He's the best. He's the best.
Love talking to you, Coach.
Yes, sir, man. Love you, brother.